Welcome to East Meets West, episode 248. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
Once again, audio only this week because we're way too busy to do a live stream. The Game of Thrones is premiering tonight.
Woo!
Yes. Who is that woo from?
That woo you're hearing is Ms. Veronica Belmont.
Ms.
Throwing a lime at me. And also a Game of Thrones pre-party and then watching party.
Yeah, we're having a little get-together tonight. Trying to figure out what kind of appropriate cocktails should be served at a Game of Thrones viewing party.
Obviously, gin fizzes.
Gin fizzes, mead, perhaps. Do we have any mead?
a little Pentos punch.
Ooh, oh, that's what I should call it. It's a gin fizz, but it's a Pentos punch.
Roger, have you ever read the Song of Ice and Fire series at all?
None.
So you're coming into watching the Game of Thrones series a George R. R. Martin virgin.
Sure. As I've never been touched by him, yes.
I guess in that sense, we're all three George R. R. Martin virgins.
Gross.
Are you excited about the Game of Thrones at all, or could you really care less?
I don't know what to expect, so kind of, but not as ecstatic, say, like when Battlestar Galactica was coming. It's like, oh my God, it's a new series. Mm-hmm. I couldn't wait. This, and like, I have no context for it. So, I eagerly await the premiere episode, but I'm not sure what to, how to respond just yet.
I think that's how a lot of people feel who aren't familiar with the book series. Like, okay, this looks really cool, but I don't really have any frame of reference for what's going on. I've been trying to tell people, well, it's kind of, if you've seen Rome, I feel like it's gonna have a similar vibe in a way for people who aren't familiar with the books. You know, a lot of intrigue, a lot of family feuding, and a lot of infighting and sex and blood and guts and.
So wait. What makes this different than any other kind of sprawling political or dynastic sort of fiction? Is there something unique in the Game of Thrones? Like you were comparing it to Rome, I mean, that would set it apart other than just, different characters.
Well, it takes place in a imaginary world, unlike Rome, which took place in Rome. So that sets it apart right there.
There is magic involved. Yeah. There is a kind of fantastical element to it. I mean, of course, there will be at some point dragons in the show as well. Spoiler alert.
Nice.
So it is very dynastical, I guess, in a way. There's a lot of political infighting and a lot of intrigue. But I think it's the characters that really set it apart from other stories like this.
Yeah, I mean, the way we're talking about it now, and by the way, the premiere is on HBO. We didn't mention that. If people are like, how can I see this if I wanted to see it? Which I don't know if I want to see it, but it's on HBO. I think you could, from what we've said so far, say, oh, it sounds like Lord of the Rings meets Rome. But that would be selling it short. Because it's only like Lord of the Rings in that it's a fantasy epic. In that it, involves, people doing, like you say, magic and dragons and some of that stuff. But it's not nearly as fantastical as Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. It's a little more gritty. And almost every character is human. I'd say 99% of the characters are human. Or at least the same species that exists on this world, wherever it is. That's one of the other interesting things about it. It's got a tiny little sci-fi element because winter is coming. Doesn't mean the same thing there that it means for us on Earth. We get winter once every 365 days. It kicks off and lasts a few months. There, winter comes periodically for decades and then is gone for decades, and it's always a little different. You never really know how long it's going to last.
Oh, interesting.
There's some different elements like that.
So the more I hear about it, the more interested I get, but I'm still on the sidelines as to whether it's something I'll be in. I've never really been that into fantasy in general. I just never have been. I've always been drawn more to sci-fi, so it'll be interesting because, outside of Lord of the Rings, in terms of theatrical or or television style series. I mean, that was probably the only fantasy, quote unquote, fantasy series I was really into outside of something like, say, Xena, Warrior Princess, or Hercules, because those are more action-y, you know, and they had the comedic element. So it was, I liked it for that aspect of it rather than the, you know, hey, we got magic and trolls and all that stuff.
Yeah. Game of Thrones is more realistic fantasy, which it always makes people laugh when you say something like that.
Well, but no. I mean, there's definitely... Go ahead, sorry.
No, no, that's okay. It's just that you can see all of this stuff actually happening. You don't have to suspend your disbelief nearly as often as you would in your normal fantasy. Like, so, wizards aren't, you know, just like super magical beings that can do anything they want.
All right, so it's not high fantasy. It's more...
It's low fantasy.
It's gritty, dark, postmodern fantasy.
It's dirty. It's
limbo fantasy.
Yeah, and characters die. I mean, we don't want to stray too far into spoiler territory, but you don't want to get
too attached. Don't get attached to any anyone.
Particular character, because this is not the kind of thing where you can identify like, oh, well, he's the guy with the white hat, so he's obviously going to be here until the end of the story, because that just ain't true. This is taking a page out of real medieval history and saying, well, what if we have our fantasy world set in medieval-like times, but really like dirty medieval-like times with disease, and when you go to war, people lose limbs and die.
People you like die.
And, yeah, you know, and yeah, exactly. And people don't live very long because there's lots of war and wars kill people.
Hmm. Exactly. And something that happened to, I think, both Tom and I while we were reading the series is he drops death on you when you don't expect it.
Yeah.
You know, you just be chugging along and all of a sudden out of nowhere, a major character or a sideline character will die and you'll be like, oh,
and it's
I
a logical death.
Mentally
it's not
prepared
like they just,
for that.
They don't just fall over dead.
No.
But you weren't expecting events to lead up to their death.
Mm-hmm. So it is very interesting to follow. And the only thing I'm worried about is how people are going to understand the story without the full breadth of the book series. I'm a little concerned for people who haven't read the books, and I'm excited to see how they fix this problem. And it happens anytime a book series or anything like that is brought into a movie or brought into a TV series. Translating all the little minutiae of what happens in the series into the television world is very difficult, and you have to lose a lot of it for time's sake and for interest's sake. But there's so many minor elements that affect the overall outcome. I'm curious to see how they translate that to the series.
And in addition to that, there's a lot of machinations behind the scenes. The Game of Thrones refers to the idea that you have to manipulate and lie and deceive in order to gain power. You're playing the Game of Thrones. And some of that stuff is a lot easier to explain in text than it is to show on screen.
So it's just a lot of political intrigue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tons of political intrigue.
Interesting. Very interesting. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, you see a lot of that now as people meld, you know, when they get into sci-fi or fantasy, they try to make it more contemporary, at least in tone, by insinuating elements that a lot of people would be familiar, as you were saying, Tom, earlier, you know, elements that are people familiar with, political intrigue, you know, backstabbing, kind of bartering for power with other people and stuff that, you know, even Battlestar Galactica, I mean, a lot of people latched onto that more so than, say, another sci-fi series because it was so, you know, it was done in a way that made it very contemporary. There was a lot of, you know, I mean, it was mostly politics, actually. Right, you have all these people squeezed aboard all these ships, and you know, really, what it got down to was how do you run a government, you know, that's constantly with a population that's constantly under pressure, and you know, you have various factions and stuff that you have not only to appease, but you have to deal with, and some of those factions may not have your interest at heart, and you know, it's kind of cool. I'm very eager to see it tonight. If I don't like it tonight, then I don't know what to say.
You'll keep trying. We'll make you keep trying. I feel like people who really enjoy Battlestar Galactica will actually also very much enjoy Game of Thrones, because I think the tone and exactly what you were just explaining about the political machinations going on behind the scenes and There's no, I mean, I see the term bleak thrown around a lot in some of the Game of Thrones reviews that the show is bleak. You could say that about Battlestar Galactica, too.
Sure.
I mean, yes. There's not a lot of joyful, like, triumphant moments in these shows because they are real, because they do have that sense of realism that, you know, stuff isn't great right now. This is not a happy time in our existence. And the thing that's interesting to watch is how people get through that and how people deal with those pressures. And I think Game of Thrones is similar to Battlestar Galactica in that way.
And that's what people like. They like stories about conflict. Mm-hmm. They like stories where, you know, there's something going on that needs to be solved and people are going at each other and someone's going to get the upper hand and win and you want to see what the outcome is. If it was just a story about the happy king who ruled over a peaceful land where all the farmers planted their crops and brought in bountiful crops every year, and that's pretty much it, wouldn't be a very interesting show.
No.
Mm. No, I agree. It's and you know, it could appeal to different, you know, some audiences like certain things, others will enjoy perhaps the pilgrimage. Other people might find it a little too real and want something more high ish.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. You know, I think I see what you're saying is, you know, some people want it to be very clear, good guys and bad guys. They want it to be, yeah. You know.
But isn't that boring?
No, well, no, because for some people, that's, you know, when you have to deal with reality, especially if you're in a situation where you're scrambling to make ends meet, you want a story that doesn't reflect your everyday life because you live your everyday life. You want to escape from it. And, you know, one of the arguments for why, you know, certain Hollywood movies, we were talking about this last time, Tom, that certain movies do well overseas is because not only are their plots simple, but because the way they end with a happy ending, you know, people enjoy that. They want to see something, you know, that's uplifting, even if their life isn't, because not everyone wants to be constantly reminded that the world is, you know, an imperfect, cruel, you know, and sometimes unfair, you know, place. You know, they want to have a reality where at least, you know, the underdog wins. You know, the good guys triumph over evil, you know, because, you know, not everyone wants to deal with crap.
There will be some of that. I mean, I don't want to turn people off who aren't interested in, you know, I don't want to turn people off from the show who are worried that they're never going to get that kind of satisfaction, because that will happen. I mean, maybe we're talking up the dark side of it too much, because I think there are some moments that you feel good about in the book series, hopefully. Right, Tom?
Yeah, there are.
I'm remembering, right? Right.
What Martin is one of those brilliant authors.
You cherish it more.
Is making you think that everything's finally turning out good. You know, that the things are finally going a character's way. And so you get led into some hopeful scenario. And then, of course, fortunes change, just like they do in real life. And things start falling apart. And then you start cheering for the character to get back to the way things were going for her, you know, back before. And then things start turning around. You think, oh, now finally things are and then another obstacle. And yeah. And strings you along in that way where you're never so bereft of hope for any character that you give up. You know, there's always enough to lead you forward, like, no, but I think she's going to be able to make it. You know, I think he's finally getting the upper hand here, but he's a master at then pulling the rug out from under you, but not in a way that again, makes you give up. You still want to follow that character and help them overcome the whatever this latest obstacle is.
Hmm. Yeah.
And awesome. I think that's what makes good storytelling. I think when you become sometimes... You want to have a story that's just your brain doesn't have to work at, right? You're mm-hmm. like, I know who's going to win. I'm going to be, you know, that I'm going to be wowed by special effects. That's why the Transformers exists. when you just want to see explosions and not have to think hard about the plot. But I think if you become a sophisticated viewer, and I don't mean that as a compliment, I mean that as sort of a descriptive, like, I'm in this mood where I want to be a sophisticated viewer and I want to interpret and think on and chew on things, then you're going to like shows like Game of Thrones because they give you a lot more to dig into. And they're less frustrating for those of us who are in the mood for a thicker story where we're like, now I'm not bored, you know, because I actually don't know exactly which way things are going to go.
And we've talked about this on Sword and Laser a few times about how I sometimes get a little bit of sad story fatigue, where I do tend to read a lot of fantasy where it's not the super happy ending kind of book. But, you know, there's all other places to escape to for that. I like to be able to have my dark fantasy, my violent fantasy. And then if I want to go do something else, I can go read a different kind of book for a little while. That's why I have the Chelsea Handler book on my bedside table. It's like a Chelsea Handler chaser.
Yeah.
After you read a bunch of people killing each other.
It's an amuse-bouche.
An amuse-bouche, yes. Perfect.
You need to refresh your palate.
Yeah, I think you'll enjoy it, Roger. I really do.
We shall see.
I think you'll appreciate it that it's for smart viewers. You know what I mean?
No, I clearly understand what you mean.
Although I have to say, Roger and I almost never agree on things we like.
Roger, do you like candy stories sometimes, just when you're not wanting to think hard, or do you always want to?
I like candy stories that are smart, or if they're not smart, they're just fun. There's a hook, like it's over the top stupid and it's just ridiculous, but you enjoy that aspect of it. I don't mind if they're very black and white. I just don't like bad storytelling. I don't like, you know, where you don't have action, where you don't have a climax, or you don't have a buildup. You know what I mean? You can tell a morally unambiguous tale, but make it entertaining. If it's not entertaining, it doesn't matter what.
Well, yeah, but entertaining sort of begs the question of what is it that you find entertaining?
It's hard to say. Like I enjoyed the original Star Wars,
Episode 4.
Yeah, for, you know, all the way to Return of the Jedi, and it's, yeah, I knew what was going to happen, but I enjoyed it, you know, anyway, right? Because even though it wasn't that sophisticated in terms of plot, it was enjoyable. I could sit through. I enjoyed the morality tale. I enjoyed the hero overcoming, you know, his self-doubt, you know, trying to conquer the evil empire. I don't know. It depends on what the story is. There's some shows that try to be a little too clever, and I don't think they're very fun to watch. I'm trying to think of one right now that I was.
You can tell they're attempting to be clever, but they don't pull it off.
Well, yeah, they're trying to be smart about it, but they're so wrapped up in making sure they're smart that it's just not fun. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, I get the point. You're trying to make some sort of morale. This is kind of one of my, you know, issues with The Next Generation, is that a lot of the episodes were so wrapped up in coming a morality tale that it wasn't just enjoyable to watch. It was just it wasn't fun. It was boring. Mm-hmm. But when they did like Deep Space Nine, I liked that because now they brought in a character who wasn't, you know, without flaws. He was a flawed hero, you know, Avery Brooks. And the situation that they were in did not lend itself to having a clean-cut answer, even though there was still, the right side and the wrong side. And it was kind of nice to see that. It was kind of like, not everything is clean and, you know, not everything that has a good and evil story doesn't have to be clear-cut or clean. Yeah. It doesn't have to have, like, you know, the hero always wins and he gets the girl. It could be the hero wins, but at a cost. Right, it could be his life, his family, his love, or whatever. He sacrificed something, you know.
There are some times, though, when a well-told yet predictable story will still entertain me, where the hero wins and the evil guy loses, and you know, there's sometimes when you're just kind of in that mood for a story where you're comfortable with the way it's all going to work out. And I think maybe what you're getting at is you can tell that story as long as you tell it with some flair so that you're not bored and you're not sitting there going, I've seen this before.
For example, I know Veronica hates this movie, but I love your Highness. And and it was funny because it was just so ridiculous, and it was just funny watching this kind of...
But it wasn't even smart funny. I mean, it wasn't even base humor that had any kind of connection to the story. It was just like they threw in the F word whenever they felt like they were getting bored. You know, just for... Can I swear on this show?
You can, yeah.
Oh, I was just going to... No, now I don't want to. The moment has passed.
When you have to ask permission, it loses...
You just kind of lose
luster,
it, yeah.
Yeah.
I just didn't see. I barely laughed at all at that movie. Maybe a chuckle.
I couldn't stop laughing because
I can't even imagine you laughing that hard at that movie.
It was so absurd. It was so ridiculous. It was so juvenile. It's like, you know, all the snickering you used to do when you took sex ed and you and your buddies were in the back of the class, you know, cracking jokes, stuff like that. I mean, is it something I'm going to point to and saying, wow, this is the highlight of cinematography? No. Is it the highlight of storytelling? Definitely no. But was it fun for me? Yes. I sat through and I enjoyed it.
Fluff can be good sometimes.
I guess I just have higher standards for my fluff.
I don't know. Some of the other stuff I've seen you enjoy.
Like
us.
What?
I don't know.
Like what, Roger? Name something.
I'm trying to think of it. I don't know.
I'll tell you one that I like that I consider total fluff, and yet I always enjoy is the TV series Merlin.
Oh, you know, I haven't seen it.
You know exactly what's going to happen every episode. They've gotten a little better about it, but especially that first season, it was, you know, Merlin gets in an awkward position and he has to figure his way out and then discovers a deeper evil. And then he has to go get advice from the dragon. And then, against all odds, he uses magic to save the day, but no one can know it was him because if he reveals the magic, then he'll be in trouble.
Yes, with the dragon. I don't know. I couldn't get into that.
Spoiler alert.
That's
not a spoiler. That's the plot of every episode.
I really tried to get into that show and I couldn't. I don't know what it is. I think maybe the really crappy CG dragon just kind of like it.
Yeah, the dragon's pretty crappy CG, I agree. But he has a cool voice. And,
yes.
And I just always enjoyed the stories that they came up with to fit into that mold. And, you know, if those stories had been really, really like... I've always seen this before, then I might have been bored. But they're playing with these iconic characters like Nimue and Morgana and Guinevere and putting them in different situations. So Merlin is not the all-powerful wizard. He's a young boy who's kind of awkward. And Arthur isn't, you know, the powerful king. He's kind of an annoying teenager. And Guinevere isn't a princess. She's a maiden. You know, and she's sort of like a commoner. She hasn't been elevated yet. So that's what keeps me interested because I'm looking to see how they're going to tie these threads together into the story that we all know.
Now, do you like, you're a big fan of Arthurian legend?
I am a fan of Arthurian legend. I'm a bigger fan of tracing what gave rise to the legend, what kind of actual events may have happened to inspire the legend. I don't believe necessarily that there was a historical Arthur per se, but I think there were probably either one or more historical characters that gave rise to the Arthurian legend.
Yeah, see, like when I was a kid, I was really into Greek mythology. And so things like
me too,
Xena and Hercules, I mean, it was a natural,
I see what you're saying.
A natural, a link point for me because, yeah, you know the stories of Jason the Argonauts can be tied to Ulysses and a bunch of other stuff, and it's always fun to kind of see a lot of those tales kind of, you know, brought to life. And, you know, like, I'm a big Ray Harryhausen fan, right? When they did Jason the Argonauts, the other kind of Greek Roman slash Roman
mythology.
Clash of
the Titans?
Clash of the Titans, stuff like that. Oh, just kind
that
of like
a disappointing movie.
The original, well, not
the original,
movie.
Not the
oh,
new
the
one.
Original. That was also a disappointing movie.
Really?
Well, anyways, just teasing.
It's just fun. It's just like, it's good kind of, you know, like Saturday morning, you know, funny pages fun. You know, you just sit there for an adventure.
And I throw Excalibur into that same category because I was also interested in Greek mythology as well. So I think it's the same thing that you're talking about. When you know a little bit of the history behind it, it becomes a little more interesting, even if it's cartoonish.
So then to bring this round full circle, so if you don't know the history behind Game of Thrones, is that going to make it less easy for you to enjoy it?
Well, we'll have to see. Some stories, you know, some adaptations do really well, you know, in translating the a written material for, you know, into a screenplay. Others don't. So if I come to it not knowing anything about the story, I mean, I could be a very good a very good contrast to you and Tom's opinion of the show, based on the fact that I've never read any of the series.
I think that Game of Thrones creates its own world, and you don't necessarily need to have read the books to enjoy the television show the way you might need to have read Greek or mythology to enjoy Jason and the Argonauts more. I think you can lose yourself in this world. The key for TV is whether they give you enough of that flavor that you get out of the book so that you say, oh, this is an interesting world that's being created here. Because it's not necessarily playing directly on human myths. It plays on some, obviously dragons and magic and all of that, but it plays on them in an entirely different but self-consistent way. Magic can't do everything the way it can in most fantasy. And the heroic defenders are not entirely heroic. You know, they're human.
They have flaws.
Yeah. I think a great example
deep,
of that is the wall. The wall is this structure. This is maybe a very mild spoiler alert. So if you don't want to know anything about the story, stop listening now. But the wall is a structure in the north that was built ages ago to prevent invasion of these creatures that live in where it's always winter, north of the wall, right? Where it's cold. Mm-hmm. And in the time of this story, the wall still exists, but it's kind of a penal colony. You sort of send people there when they get in trouble. You know, you can get out of a crime by taking the black, which is wearing the black of the wall.
Because it used to be very important for you to have that job. That used to be the kind of job that people would volunteer for. There was honor to it. And then over the years, as nothing happened, as winter didn't come, it just ended up being all the people that they couldn't put anywhere else.
Yeah.
They're like, so we have to put someone on the wall, so might as well be the convicts.
So you have this heroic tradition that's still being carried out up there, and this thought of the wall and the men who protect us from the evils of the north, but they're totally, you know, they're under-resourced because nobody really wants to send any money up there, because when has anything actually come down from the north anyway? I mean, really, that's just a waste of money. And they don't have enough men, so they're strung out very thinly across the wall. And it's just seen as exile. And so it's the heroic defenders of the wall in tradition, but kind of a crappy place to end up in real life.
Huh. Interesting.
A lot of different elements. It's hard to explain. There's a lot of stuff going on. And I think that's what I'm the most excited to see, is really how they bring all these storylines together in the show.
Yeah, because that's what makes Song of Ice and Fire, the series of books, is this vast world where it's not just one part of it that you're getting a peek at. I mean, you think about it, this may be controversial for me to say, but Tolkien really only shows you a handful of cities in one or two regions, depending on how you think of it. Martin shows you vastly different areas of a large, large world. And it's much more difficult for him to pull it off, but he does.
So you excited yet, Roger?
Yes, I am slightly, my excitement has slightly been elevated.
You have elevated levels of midichlorians?
No, just maybe dopamines or something. Oh, no, wait, adrenaline. No, it's adrenaline. What makes you excited?
Adrenaline. Different kind of excited, though.
Spurs your energy for fight or flight. Dopamine makes you feel good.
I don't think you have any of those things quite yet. I think you're just feeling optimistic.
Maybe some oxytocin, because you're talking to us.
Could be. I don't know what to expect.
Well, I don't want to prejudice you anymore. You should be our innocent eyes and ears going into it.
I'll just get you good and drunk. Then you'll enjoy
that
it.
It doesn't take much.
Or fall asleep.
Yes. Well, see, if I fall asleep, then I won't be enjoying anything except my sleep. And you might hear me snore loudly.
I can only imagine. That'll be exciting.
So, folks, if you would like to comment on Roger's sleep patterns, You can find our comments on our website, sabrilliant.com/EMW. Thanks to the folks who commented on last episode. Had a couple people say they really liked it because it felt like vintage East Meets West. We were it was just me and Roger kind of going off on various topics, ethnicity, identity, and film, what makes a good film, what makes good culture.
Old school style.
I got taken to task for interrupting Roger too much. Roger, do you think I interrupt you too much?
Well, I don't know.
I'll probably get taken to task for interrupting you too much, Tom.
Well, good. The circle is complete. Then I'll just interrupt you.
I feel like Roger's always trying to interrupt me, and then I keep talking, and it sounds like I'm interrupting him.
Interesting. No. See what he did there? He turned it around on you.
I know, but I disagree, since I actually haven't started talking until he was finished.
But I've gotten really paranoid this episode.
And now no one's going to talk because no one wants to interrupt anyone else.
Is Roger done yet?
We'll just sit here in silence.
I'm not sure.
awkward.
Silence.
So awkward.
So thanks to Keith, Kvolk, Chuma for commenting. You can comment too, sabrilliant.com/EMW. Thanks to Veronica for hanging out with us and talking Game of Thrones. Good to have you back on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Let folks know where they can find your other things.
I am on the Twitters at twitter.com/Veronica and veronicabelmont.com.
Thank you, Roger.
Thank you, Tom and Veronica, for being on the show.
It's just a big mutual adoration society here.
We love each other so, so very much. Oh, and don't forget Sword and Laser.
Oh, yes. Swordandlaser.com. In fact, we talk a lot about Game of Thrones, if you're interested.
We do.
On that podcast. It's all about sci-fi and fantasy books. That's it for this episode of East Meets West. Thanks to Scott Johnson and the Frog Pants Network for carrying us. And thanks to you for listening or watching. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.